Once again, we have two parshas. I mean, we are ripping through Sefer Vayikra at breakneck speed. Achremos and Kadoshim, each one, of course, itself deserving our full attention. Mirtz Hashem, we will be able to devote some time to each of these parshas. And we begin with Achremos. And of course, Achremos is part of our yearly cycle, not only as one of the parshas of the week, parshas Acharemos, but of course the beginning of Acharemos is also the laning for Yom Kippur morning, because it describes the Seder of Avodas Yom Kippurim. And there's a most interesting aspect, anomaly, really, of these opening psukim. We are referring, of course, to Vayikra Perek Tet Zayin. And that is that there's something about the way the psukim are written which does not reflect entirely or parallel completely the way the avoda was done. We refer specifically to the fact that, as we know, there were two sets of begodim, of special garments that the Kohen Gadol would wear on this day. There were the standard, shall we say, big day Kohen Gadol that he used for all of the avodah that was outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but for when he went lifnai v'lifnim, what is called, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which he did for a number of things, to sprinkle the blood of certain korbanos and to offer the ketores, there he would only wear big day lavan, purely white. There could be no gold in that very sensitive area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, not to remember or in any way associate with the Egel HaZahav, En Kategor, Nase Sanegor. The prosecution cannot be part of the defense. The question is, how many times did he change garments between what we would call, the Gemara calls gold, Big Day Zahav, the garments that have gold in them, and Big Day Lavan, the pure white? Now, if we know a bit of the Seder Avodah, so actually there were five changes of clothing, and that means that he went to the mikveh five times, and he did Kiddush Adayim Raglayim 10 times, if you follow the Mishnayos and the Seder Avodah, because accompanying each change of clothing, there was another immersion in the mikveh, and another Kiddush, two Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, one on either side. And there were 5 changes of clothing. That is to say, he begins with gold for the quote-unquote everyday avodas. He then changes into only white for going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then back to gold for more outside avodos. And back to white again a second time before he changes back into gold. The question is, what is he doing changing into Big Day Lavan the second time? The answer is, there's one thing left in the Kodesh HaKadoshim that he still needs to do, and that is to remove the pan and the ketores that he left in there the first time, hotzoas kaf umachto. Now, the reason why this is so noteworthy is because if one looks at the psukim in the beginning of the parsha, there is no reference to the 2 changes of clothing. That is to say, all of the things that the Kohen Gadol would do in the pure white clothing are all mentioned together. And if that is the case, then actually, as Rashi informs us and the Gemara describes, we need outside information, an oral tradition, Halacha Lamoshe Misinai, that as much as these things are written together, there are things written later that happened in between the 2 episodes of Big Day Lavan, giving you 5 changes of clothing. Now, this is something that we've spoken about in the past. There's a famous treatise of the Vilna Gaon about this. But something that never occurred to me before, and I just saw this afternoon, was asked by Rav Soloveitchik. In other words, there's a lot to discuss about this. Details. And how do we know? And the like. And one question that's remained unasked, and it's the sort of question that should remain unasked unless you have a good answer for it. And that is, why? Why would it be so, if one may ask? As if to say, the Torah is fully capable of writing the psukim in the order that they actually occurred. So, mazeh v'al mazeh. What are we to make of the fact that the Torah has not written things in the way that they actually occurred, but rather we need to rely on what we called outside information, that is to say an oral tradition, in order to know that actually the order is slightly different. There was gold, white, and gold. And the answer to this question, says Rav Soloveitchik, is based on a drasha of his great-grandfather. Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik was a great-grandson of the original Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, known as Rav Yosher Ber. He is the Beis Halevi. He is the founder of the Soloveitchik dynasty. And Rav Yosef Dov was called after him. And he has 18 drushos, the Beis Halevi. And in Drush Yud Ches, the Beis Halevi propounds and develops, based on many makoros in Chazal, something very interesting. We know that there were two sets of luchos, and the question is, was there any difference between them? Which could be answered in a number of ways. But were there any material or significant differences between them? And based on makoros in Yerushalmi and Medrash Rabbah and the like, the Beis Halevi explains that there was a difference between them. A key difference. The first luchos, we are familiar with the concept of Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebal Peh, the written and then the oral that accompanies it. And the first luchos had, in one form or another, the entirety of the Torah encrypted in them. That is to say, in one form or another, there was a reference to every halacha. The division between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh was minimal because there was a reference on the luchos to every halacha. That was the key change between the first set of luchos and the second set of luchos. For in the second set, it was only the Aseres Hadibros which may yet represent Torah Shebichtav, but there was no Torah Shebal Peh on the luchos. And the reason why, as the Mefarshim explain, is that in order for the Jewish people to attain their kapara, they needed to have a closer association with the Torah than they'd had to date. Whereby, if initially the entirety of the Torah exists there, written on the luchos, and the Jewish people are learning it, they're studying it, that's a certain level of association. In order to vouchsafe the continued level and Jewishness of the Jewish people, there is a certain aspect of Torah that needs to be lifted off the luchos, and it is no longer to be found anywhere other than the Jewish people themselves. They become the repository of an area of Torah which gives them a status almost akin to a Sefer Torah itself. As the Pasuk states in Mishlei, Kosveim aluach libecha. There are certain things that you need to write on your own heart, and that is in order to keep the Jewish people on par. So it's very interesting, because what is happening between the first luchos and second luchos, it's not just a repeat. It's not just a second version of something that didn't work the first time around. It's actually working differently. In this key respect, the Torah Shebal Peh exists now as a much more self-contained or separate discipline for the Jewish people to be engaged in. The second luchos were given on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur emerges as a day, and of course these two things are connected. It is the day of Slicha and Mechila, and it is the day of Kapara. And it is the day of the luchos shniim. It is the day of the second type of Matan Torah. And therefore, says Rabbi Yosef Dov, now taking the baton from the Beis Halevi, if we understand that key within Yom Kippur is a day of tshuva, rehabilitation, via the discipline which is called Torah Shebal Peh, so now, of course, how appropriate it is that the Torah, as it expresses the Seder Avoda of Yom HaKippurim, does so in a way that you do not fully or accurately understand the Seder of the Avodah without accessing pure Torah Shebal Peh. There's an oral tradition, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. It's not in the Psukim to know that there were not only three changes of clothing with all of the Big Day Lavan events happening together, but rather Torah Shebal Peh tells us that there were five. That is part and parcel of what Yom Kippur is all about. So I found this to be a fascinating comment of Rav Soloveitchik. And as we see on many occasions, the Soloveitchik family, they consider the Divrei Torah of their forebears to be not merely history, but heirlooms, to be preserved and embellished. And there was much built on the earlier Torahs of the Beis Halevi by Rabbi Yosef Dov, and this is a classic example of that. So further discussions of Yom HaKippurim, we will leave till Yom Kippurim. And I would like to move from here, within Parshas Acharemos, to a pasuk that I would venture to suggest is one of the better-known psukim of Parshas Acharemos, and that is in Perek Yud Ches, pasuk Hey. And this is a pasuk that is very well known because of a halacha that is derived from it. The pasuk reads, Perek Yud Ches pasuk Hey, Ushmartem eschukosai ves mishpatai, keep the statutes and the mishpatim, Asher ya'aseh osam ha'adam v'chai bohem, that a person should perform them v'chai bohem. And of course, those two words, v'chai bohem, are pivotal when it comes to the halacha, because they are the makor in the Gemara for the concept of pikuach nefesh. That is to say, it is from here we learn that mitzvahs should never be the cause of death. If keeping a mitzvah will endanger a person's health significantly, that they're possibly their life is in danger, we say v'chai bohem. V'chai bahem, v'lo sheyomus bahem. They should live through them and not die through them. Now, this is one of a number of makoros that are mentioned in the Talmud, in Maseches Yuma, and Daf Pehe, Amud Beis. But that is well known. V'chai bahem, it's a maxim to live through Torah, with a number of exceptions. But what's interesting is, and before we yet get back to Pikuach Nefesh, it's interesting that not everywhere in Chazal is this pasuk, Vayikra, Perek Yud Ches, pasuk Hey, taken as referring to keeping mitzvahs. There is a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Tes Omid Aleph, which seems to take the pasuk as referring to learning Torah. The Gemara there says that anyone who learns Torah, and that's the point, the Torah is not restricted to any elite group, Ha'adam, anyone, every man, Ashayasa Osama Adam V'chai Bahem, can achieve the ultimate existence. It is a reference to learning Torah. There are certain things that are restricted. Not everyone can do the Avodah. Not everyone's a Melech. But anyone can learn Torah. Asher Yasa Osam Ha'adam V'chai Bahem. And it's very interesting that we seem to emerge, if so, with two rather different plateaus on which to understand the subject of this pasuk. Is it referring to learning Torah, as per the Talmud in Sanhedrin Nuntes, or is it referring to keeping mitzvahs, which is much more the well-known concept as per v'chai bohem, keeping mitzvahs, or not doche pikuach nefesh. And there is a truly stunning exposition of this pasuk, which is to be found in the Perush HaMikdavar of the Netziv. And he will take us deep into Pshuto Shamikra. The concepts of Chukim and Mishpatim that we meet often in the Torah. Chukim and Mishpatim, Shmatem Esukosai, Mishpatai, in different forms and combinations, can themselves be understood on two planes. The entire enterprise, which is called Chukim and Mishpatim, can mean two things. Now, what are those two things? And how can we know which one of them it refers to? says the Netziv, will learn a lot about Pasuk Hey by going back to Pasuk Dalet. But let's see what it says there. Es mishpatai ta'asu ves chukosai tishmeru laleches behem ani Hashem Elokeichem. Okay. That Pasuk more or less does not need translation. Keep the mishpatim, keep the chukim, and perform them. So that's very interesting. Because Pasuk Hey now needs really to be taken in light of the fact that it seems to be more or less restating Pasuk Dalet. What does Pasuk Hey say? Keep the chukim and mishpatim. Pasuk Dalet said approximately the same thing. So what is Pasuk Hey saying? Of course it adds v'chai b'hem, but the entire setup has just been repeated. If you could have put v'chai b'hem into Pasuk Dalet, we could have saved ourselves the whole pasuk. But of course, we should note, and this is the key point as far as the Netziv is concerned, which one is mentioned first? On that, Pasuk Dalet and Pasuk He are divided. Pasuk Dalet reads, Es mishpatai ta'asu, es chukosai tishmaru. Mishpatim before chukim. Pasuk He says, Ushmartem es chukosai ves mishpatai. They mentioned chukim before mishpatim. V'halo dovar hu. What are we to make of that? Says the Netziv, and on this there is consensus amongst the Meforshim. We understand that whenever the Pasuk gives you a number of items, or number of concepts or entities, there will be a logical progression. There will be a logical build-up. It will go not only the lesser point, but even the higher point, and thus it will build. What the Talmud would call lo zu af zu, not only this, but even this. That's how a pasuk builds. It will never mention the more obvious before the less obvious. That already then becomes redundant. It's not a progression. And if that sounds somewhat abstract, let us apply that here. People are more inclined to keep mishpatim than they are chukim. Because the difference between mishpatim and chukim is that mishpatim are mitzvahs that we understand, and chukim are mitzvahs that we don't understand. And therefore, our intuition, we gravitate more towards mishpatim, and less towards chukim, all things being equal. Now, of course, you have to keep both. But the correct way to express that, if that is the case, is to mention first mishpatim, and then chukim. As if to say that the Torah enjoins you to keep not only mishpatim, which you're more predisposed to keep, but even the chukim. The logical flow, the logical sequence is from mishpatim to chukim. And that's Pasuk Dalet. Perfect. What about Pasuk Hey? Pasuk Hey reverses it and puts chukim before mishpatim. But of course, that is now illogical. That is counterintuitive. Because if you've already mentioned chukim, so then mishpatim are in the bag. So what happens when the Torah switches the order around and mentions chukim and mishpatim? Says the Netziv, something decisive happens. If the Torah mentions chukim before mishpatim, the reference is no longer to different types of mitzvahs, but the reference is to a process called learning Torah. And the word chukim now is radically redefined. Chukim is no within the context of learning Torah. Chukim does not refer to mitzvahs that we don't understand. Chukim refer to the rules of learning Torah, the rules of deriving halacha, of which mishpatim are the product. So mishpatim then chukim means a certain type of mitzvah and then another type of mitzvah. That's pasuk dalet. Chukim then mishpatim is the process of learning Torah, the rules of deriving halachas. And the halachas that are derived. And that, says the Netziv, will explain to us why it is that the Talmud understands that Pasuk Hey is a reference to learning Torah. It's so delicate. But the fact that the Torah, in such stark contrast to the Pasuk before, mentioned Chukim before Mishpatim, it's talking about the methodology of learning Torah and deriving halachas, where the Chukim, the rules of learning Torah, will give you the halachas. And the concept of Chok, learning Torah, as referred to as a chok, is the beginning of Parshas Bechukosai. In Bechukosai, Teileichu, Shetiyu Amelim BaTorah. That's the exercise of learning Torah through those bylaws. It turns out, therefore, that the Talmud, which understands Pasuk Hey as referring to learning Torah, is actually closer to Pshuto Shel Mikra than the Gemara that said that it's about keeping mitzvahs, which leads us to V'chai Bahem. That is an extra contextual drasha. It's a kavona shnia. It's a secondary drasha, which also comes out from the Pasuk, but it's that much more removed from Pshuto Shel Mikra. And by the way, says the Netziv, I'll prove it to you. Everybody knows that V'chai Bahem means that Pikuach Nefesh trumps Averis. Everybody also knows that there are three exceptions. And when I saw what the Netziv was about to say, I almost fell off my chair. Because one of those exceptions is Gilui Arayos, forbidden relationships, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shvichas Domim. These words, V'chai Bohem, are mentioned as an introduction to the Parsha of Arayos. The next dozen or so psukim are relationships that are absolutely forbidden by the Torah. Says the Netziv, could you have thought of a more ill-advised place to put the word V'chai Bohem? There are 610 better options. And Torah put it here. That's a good point, if we may say so. And therefore, says the Netziv, it's clear that first and foremost, V'chai Bohem refers to the process of learning Torah. And rather, the reason why the Torah put it here is because the more involved a person is in Torah, the more he will be protected from getting drawn in to these relationships. That is why the Torah chose to, the location is decided based on the primary understanding that full involvement in Torah learning and Torah living, that is what will keep a person away from these relationships. The secondary drasha of V'chai Bohem follows suit, and that is how it comes. We have this most unusual situation on our hands, whereby the Dinat Pikuach Nefesh is Doha Torah is written 3 seconds before we embark on a parsha where it's actually not true. So this is a most fascinating discussion of the Netziv in the HaMikdavar. And let us get back to V'chai Bohem, which is what we thought it meant only 10 minutes ago. So V'chai Bohem means that Pikuach Nefesh is Doha other mitzvahs. Interestingly, that is not the only makor in the Torah, that Pikuach Nefesh is Doche other mitzvahs. There are a number of others that are mentioned in the Talmud. Probably the next best known is from Parshas Kisisa, Ushmartem es HaShabbos. What does that mean? It means, says the Gemara, this is Rabbi Elazar, Chaleil alav Shabbos echad achas kidei sheyishmor Shabbosos harbe. In other words, we learned from here that Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Shabbos. You can break Shabbos in order to save a life in the interest of keeping Shabbos. In other words, if he dies now, so then how many more Shabbos is he going to keep? So it's an amazing drasha, but it's an investment in Hilcha Shabbos. It's an investment in Shmirah Shabbos. If you let the one Shabbos take the fall, but you have any number of following Shabbosos that he will then keep. Very interesting. But we should know that there could be halachic differences between, or implications of, what is the source. If the source is, and this the Talmud says, you see, if the source is Ushmartem es HaShabbos, break this Shabbos, he'll keep next Shabbos, so there are very difficult questions that need to be asked. Number one, what happens if it doesn't look like he's going to make it till next Shabbos? What happens if it could only preserve his life for a matter of hours? So he can make Abdullah. We don't know if he's going to make it until next Shabbos. What happens if a person who doesn't keep Shabbos? Well, maybe he'll change his mind if you saved his life and told him why. But specifically, the difference between them, a key difference between them is, what if you're not sure that you'll save his life by breaking Shabbos? You're taking a risk. In other words, his life is in danger. And you don't know that if you break Shabbos, you'll save his life. Or, conversely, You don't know that his life is in danger. Maybe. So, are you allowed to break Shabbos? There's no definitely here. And on this point, and this is the final analysis of the Talmud there, it depends. If your only source was Ushmartim es HaShabbos, you could not break Shabbos unless you knew that his life was in danger and you knew that you'd be able to save his life. But if it comes from V'chai Bohem, which is what we take as the Halacha, if it comes from V'chai Bohem, even a case of Sofek Bikuruch Nefesh is Doche. Even if you don't know that he's in danger, but you think he might be, his life may be in danger, and even if you don't know that what you're doing will help him, but it might help him, even Sofek V'chai Bohem is an absolute priority, even in cases of Sofek. And that is the halacha. And this leads us to a very interesting question, which was again asked by the Netziv in his perush on the She'iltos of Rav Chai Gaon. There is a Tosfos in Maseches Bav Metzia. The Tosfos is commenting on the fact that Eliyahu HaNavi, as we know, is actually someone that we have met earlier in the Tanakh, namely, Pinchas. Pinchas ze Eliyahu. And the Tosfos, based on this, proceed to ask an amazing question. I think most people, even when we put the facts together, probably would not ask this question. But this is it. This is in Maseches Bav Metzia, Daf Kuf Yud Dalet, Amud Beis. Teima L'ri. Rabbeinu Yitzchak Bar HaTosfos is in wonderment. What's his problem? As we know, one of the episodes that made Eliyahu HaNavi famous is that he brought someone back to life. Right? The son of that Almana. Says the Tosfos, I have a problem. If he's a Kohen, how could he have ever been in the same room with him to bring him back to life? That's very interesting. You have to have a strong halachic constitution to be bothered by this. And this is Tosfos following the golden axiom of Tosfos throughout Shas. Thou shalt not get carried away. Everybody else, he did chias hameisim, and it's amazing. And Tosfos is saying, why is there no halachic problem here? He's a Kohen, should never have been allowed to be in the same room with him. So what's the answer? It says the Tosfos, V'yesh lomar, shehaya barur lo shechayehu. Well, he knew that he'd be able to bring him back to life. Lakach hayamuter, mishum pikuach nefesh. It's pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh is doche, isurei teru. Now this must be one of the most unusual cases of pikuach nefesh in the history of pikuach nefesh, because it is actually a post-facto pikuach nefesh. If pikuach means to watch after something, he's actually looking after it to get it back. So be it. The result is the same. And therefore, if the question is, there's an aveira for a Kohen to become tamei, the answer is pikuach nefesh. So all is resolved. Says the Netziv, I just have one problem. And that is, Tosfos said, the reason why Eliyahu allowed himself, so if you read carefully the words of Tosfos, allowed himself to become Tomei for purposes of what he did, Shahaya barur lo sheyechayehu, he was certain he'd be able to bring him back to life. Says the Netziv, what if he wasn't certain? I've never done it before. What if he thought he may be able to do it? Would that give him license to become Tomei? The halachas of pikuach nefesh, as we know them, are yes. Because even Safik Pikuach Nefesh, but Tosfos went out of their way to say that he knew he'd be able to do it. Why is that key here? It's not necessary for Pikuach Nefesh to know. It's enough to have a good enough reason to think so. That's the Netziv's kasha. And what's the answer? The answer, says the Netziv, is to be found in a Gemara in Maseches Krisos, based on a pasuk in Parshas Kisisa. The Torah states, with regards to Shemen HaMishcha, the special oil that was used to anoint the articles of the Mishkan and the Mishkan itself, and there is a lo sa'aseh for a person to apply that oil to themselves. The pasuk says, "Al besar adam lo yisach." Cannot be applied. Sicha, again, that term. It cannot be applied to the skin of a person. That's a lo saseh. Hasach b'shemen ha-mishcha. It's one of the lo saseh of the Torah. Okay. Says the Mishnah in Croesus. What if a person applied it to someone who was no longer alive? The Mishnah needs to discuss every scenario because these things just have to happen once and you need to know what to do. Hasach al hames, says the Mishnah, is potter. Okay, now we know. What does this tell us? Says the Netziv, you know what it tells you? The Pasuk said, al basar adam lo yisach, cannot be applied to the flesh of Adam. The Mishnah says if you apply it to the skin of someone who's no longer alive, you're exempt. That teaches you that as far as the Torah is concerned, the category that is called Adam refers to people that are alive and not dead. And if that's true, says the Netziv, so we have a very interesting shaila. Namely, the din of pikuach nefesh is learned from v'chai bohem. Quite true. But the pasuk says, "Vayikra perek yudches pasukei, asheyasa osam ha'adam v'chai bohem." If that's true, then Adam, the din of v'chai bohem, only accrues to someone who's in the category of Adam. Someone who's no longer alive is not considered to be Adam in this respect. And so now we have an interesting shaila. What license does Eliyahu HaNavi have, even invoking Pikuach Nefesh, to bring back this boy? He's no longer called Adam, so there's no v'chai bohem. So there's no heter of Pikuach Nefesh, says the Netziv. No, there's still a heter of Pikuach Nefesh, just not from v'chai bohem. But there's another drasha, is there not? What about Shmiras Shabbos? B'shar Moras HaShabbos. Chalel Alav Shabbos Achas. So there's still plenty of scope for Pikuach Nefesh, says the Netziv, yes. But as soon as you default to that other pasuk of Ushmartem Es HaShabbos, didn't the Talmud tell us, Safek Pikuach Nefesh doesn't override any commandment, only Vadei Pikuach Nefesh. And that's why the Tosfos, in one line, went out of their way to say that Eliyahu HaNavi was sure he'd be able to do it, because he's not dealing with an Adam. He can still invoke Pikuach Nefesh, but it's coming from a different source, and in terms of that source, you have to be sure. So this is an entirely different way of learning Chumash than I think is our common experience, and it's wonderful to have the greats to expose us to it. From here, I'd like to move to the end of Parshas Acharemus. We'll see if we get to Kedoshim, but this is deserving of our time. Perek Yudches Pasuk Kafhei. Perek Yudches is all about arayos. It's all about these forbidden relationships. And then the Torah discusses the consequences. Vatitma ha'aretz. Pardon me if we move back to Pasuk Kafdalet. Al titamu b'chol eilo. Do not become impure through all these things. Ki b'chol eilo nitbu'u ha'goyim asher ani mishaleach b'pneichem. Because all of the nations that are being banished from in front of you, they were involved in these things. Pasuk kafei vatitma ha'aretz va'efko davana aleha vatoki ha'aretz. It's your shver. The land spat them out. And that could happen to you. Pasuk kafches v'lovsoki ha'aretz eschem b'tamachem osa. Let the same thing not happen to you. Kasher ka'a esagoya shelifnecha. And the Ramban here asks a simple question. There seems to be a connection drawn between the Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael and keeping on level with these forbidden relationships. And the reason why there is a problem is that Eretz Yisrael has a special relationship to a certain type of mitzvah. There are certain types of mitzvahs that actually only apply in Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvahs atluyas ba'aretz, trumos and maasros and the like. But the Talmud tells us explicitly in Maseches Kiddushin that mitzvahs which are chovas haguf, which are personal mitzvahs and are not land-related, are not exclusively the domain of Eretz Yisrael at all. They apply in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. But the Torah seems to be presenting the consequences of not keeping these mitzvahs as somehow a violation of the Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael. Now, there is a comment of this Sifrei in Parshas Ekev, quoted by Rashi actually, which is a big chiddush, and we need to know how to field it correctly. It's from the second Parsha of Shema, which we say every day, and the Pasuk describes foretells possible galus, va'avadatem mehira, the Jewish people do things that are bad enough, va'avadatem mehira, with an aleph, aveda, me'alo atzatavar, she'er Hashem nosein lachem. So the Jewish people have been thrown out of Eretz Yisrael. The next pasuk says, v'samtem es dvarei eile al lavchem al nafshechem. Take these things to heart. And what's very interesting is, parshanut question. What is the relationship between that second pasuk, v'samtem es dvarei eile, to the earlier pasuk of the Jewish people being lo aleinu, thrown out of Eretz Yisrael? So I think one may have said, al derech hapshat, that the Torah has said, if the Jewish people do these averas, they could be thrown out. Take the above to heart and make sure it doesn't happen. I think one would have understood that to be the pashtus. Interestingly, Rashi quotes the Sifrei, which understands that this second pasuk, v'samtem es dvarei eile, take these things to heart, does not refer to protecting against the earlier pasuk, but it's describing life after the first pasuk. In other words, if the Jewish people have been thrown out and they're in galus, then what? Says the pasuk, "Besamtem es dvarei eile, al levavchem, al nafshechem." Still take the Torah to heart. Still keep the mitzvahs. And that's what Rashi says from Ekev. Af al pisha to you golim, even if you're in galus, still keep the mitzvahs. Hanichu tefillin. Still put on tefillin. Asu mezuzos. Still put a mezuzah on your door. Because one day you'll be back. Now, this comment of the Sifrei, and of course Rashi's job is to explain pshat in the pasuk, not to explain what the Sifrei that he quotes. But of course, it again is troublesome for us, because the implication is that the essential requirement to fulfill mitzvahs, even like tefillin and mezuzah, are in Eretz Yisrael. And if you're in Chutz La'aretz, should you do them? So the answer is yes. And the reason why is because one day you'll come back to Eretz Yisrael. The implication is that there is no intrinsic obligation. And that, of course, cannot be true. Because once again, the Mishnah has told us these are not land-based mitzvahs, these are chovas haguf. They are mitzvahs d'oraisa in Chutz La'aretz as requirements in themselves. We move on. The Talmud in the final pages of Maseches Ksubos discusses Eretz Yisrael from a number of angles. And it makes a statement. It may be well known, doesn't mean that it's well understood. And says the Talmud, Kol hadar b'chutz la'aretz, a person who lives outside of Israel, Dome Kemisha Ein Lo Eloah. It's like they don't have a God. Originally, the Gemara said if a person lives in Chutz La'aretz, it's like they were Ovid Avodah Zarah. And then the Talmud said, really? How can that be? So the Talmud revises it and modifies it to, not that they're like Ovid Avodah Zarah, it's just that like they don't have a God. That was considered the milder version. Shine Emar, quoting a pasuk. Just reading, Shine Emar, Laseis Lachem es Eretz Kanan Lios Lachem Elohim. The Torah says, implying that only people who live in Eretz Yisrael, Hashem is them, Lelokim. This is getting more and more disturbing, and we haven't finished yet. Because there is a Sifrei in Parshas Re'eh about the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, which says that Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael is Shekula Keneged Kol HaMitzvah Sheba Torah. It is equal in weight to all mitzvahs in the Torah. These are statements that need to be understood very well. And the reason why is because all statements of Agodah, as the Ramchal explains in his introduction to Agodos, are pieces of a picture. And if a person takes a piece of a picture and sees it as the whole picture, so he'll miss the fuller picture. For example, if we take the final statement, living in Eretz Yisrael is equal to all other mitzvahs. Okay. If we try and take that kipshuto, literally, we will have a problem, because Chazal say the same thing about 7 or 8 other mitzvahs. So if the moral of the story is, if a person lives in Eretz Yisrael, they're like fulfilling all the mitzvahs, the Talmud also says that the mitzvah of tzitzis is shakul keneged kol ha-mitzvahs. But now the laws of physics will begin to get skewed, because when you say that the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael is equal in weight to all other mitzvahs, does that mean all other mitzvahs, including tzitzis, which is equal in weight to all other mitzvahs, including living in Eretz Yisrael? And that's just 2 of them, and there's 6 more. The Ramban discusses this at length, and these are important yesodos for these days and for all days. The yesod is based on a pasuk in Parshas Devarim, which explains that there is a certain level of indirect connection that exists between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and people in Chutz La'aretz. The words of the pasuk are referring to kochovim and mazolos. This has to be taken very delicately. Asher chalak Hashem Elokecha osam lechol ha'amim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has apportioned mazolos to the nations of the world. That means that in all other areas of the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his interaction is filtered through these mazolos, through these other divine flows. But it's not a direct connection. And this is the concept of Sorei Umos HaOlam, right? Of the, so to speak, the guardian angel of Umos HaOlam. That means that all of their hashpa'ah, the divine flow that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it comes via their force in between and for there to the nation. That is what we mean when we say Hashem is Melech Malchei Hamlochim. That means, if it's translated, Melech Malchei Hamlochim as King of Kings, that's a mistranslation. Or it is an under-translation. Because literally, Melech Malchei Hamlochim means the King of Kings of Kings. Melech Hamlochim is King of Kings. Melech Malchei Hamlochim refers to the Sarim, who are actually yet the overseers of the temporal king. So, and Hashem is Melech Malchei Hamlochim. And then there's everybody else underneath. So says Rabbeinu Bachya. And if that is true, then that will necessarily mean that the relationship that is possible between a person in Chutz La'aretz and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not direct in the way that it would be in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the exception. And that is why the Eretz Yisrael is described in Parshas Ekev as Eretz Asher Ein Hashem Elokecha Ba Mireishis Hashana Ad Achir Shana. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes are on that land. It refers to that immediacy of connection. And that is what the Talmud means in Maseches Ksubos, when it says that if a person who lives in Chutz La'aretz, it's like he doesn't have a God, Doma Kimil She'ein Lo Eloah, that means that he's missing out on that direct connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is only possible within Eretz Yisrael. And the truth is that this was expressed originally very early on. The first person to talk about this concept, as far as Ramban is concerned, is Yaakov Avinu. For isn't that what he says in Parshas Vayetze, as he makes his neder, Vayidar Yaakov neder, Im Yelukim imadi, if Hashem will be with me, Ushmarani baderech hazeh, Venosi lulecha nechol, ubeged lubosh, etc. Vishavti vishalom el beisavi, if I be able to come back, Vahaya Hashem li lelukim, says Ramban. What Yaakov is saying is that only when I'm able to come back to Eretz Yisrael will I again enjoy that direct connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu about which the Talmud is speaking. And moreover, says Ramban, This special relationship, special direct relationship, was presented as part of Matan Torah. We are just a few weeks away from Matan Torah. I don't wish to say exactly how far away. I don't wish to jeopardize by inference my Sefiras HaOmer options, but we're on the way. And the Kriyas HaTorah for Shavuos morning, Parshas Yisro, says, "Batemti im Shabbat Shmum Koli, vihiyisem li segula, ki li haaretz." Those are the words of Shmos Perek Yutes. Vihiyisem li segula, ki li haaretz. And the way most Mefarshim understand, I think, is that segula means treasure, special relationship, and the Pasuk is saying that Hashem is saying to the Jewish people, you are the Am Segula, even though the entire world is mine. But from that entire world, I chose you. V'yisem segula ki li ha'aretz. Says Ramban, no. Ha'aretz doesn't mean the world. Ha'aretz means ha'aretz. It means Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was addressing the Jewish people on the way to Eretz Yisrael, and he is saying, this is the Torah that is given for you, the optimal and maximal fulfillment of the Torah in every respect will be in Eretz Yisrael, where our relationship is direct. That is where you will be segula, ki li ha'aretz, because Eretz Yisrael is mine, and that's where you're headed. And what that means is, according to the Ramban, the appellation of Am Segula for the Jewish people is located, predicated upon their presence in Eretz Yisrael. And now, the question is, how does this manifest itself, historically and practically? Well, as we know, the position of the Ramban in Parshas Toldos is that the notion that we get from Chazal in Maseches Yuma and Daf Kafches and Breishis Rabbah in a number of places, that the Ovos kept Tariq Mitzvahs on a voluntary basis, even though, to the extent of the words applicable to them, even though they were not commanded. And the Ramban is of the opinion that that was only true when they were in Eretz Yisrael. But when they were in Chutz La'aretz, strictly speaking, it's not necessary. And the reason why, says Ramban, is because the Avos intuited that in order to live a healthy spiritual existence in Eretz Yisrael, that demands of them Tariag Mitzvahs. Schar Dira in Eretz Yisrael is Tariag Mitzvahs. That's just in terms of living there. No one's commanded you to do them. But it's in tune. The others who were in tune with the spirituality of the place understood that that's what's demanded of a person who wants to live in Eretz Yisrael. It literally goes with the territory. Moreover, the Ramban is of the opinion, or states, that the destruction of Sodom, and Sodom was a corruption on every level, on a behavioral level and on a constitutional level, and it was destroyed. And apparently, says Ramban, Sodom was the worst place in the world. It's the only place that was destroyed like that. And there, says Ramban in Parshas Vayera, I'm not sure. Not necessarily. There may have been places as bad, if not worse, in the world as Sodom. But not in Eretz Yisrael. It is possible that that behavior would not have warranted the absolute destruction of five cities in a place outside of Eretz Yisrael. But Eretz Yisrael couldn't tolerate it. That was what marked their destruction. So these are all comments that are bringing us to the same understanding. And moreover, says Ramban, what this means is, and this is the delicate point, what this means is that as true as it is that there is a full mitzvah min haTorah of mitzvahs that are not land-based everywhere in the world, yes. There is a full obligation. There is no difference in the level of obligation, but there is a difference in the level of fulfillment. Those are two separate things. Number one, the extent to which a person is obligated to perform the mitzvah, and number two, the extent to which a person is capable of fulfilling the mitzvah. The chiyuv is universal, but the level of kiyum, that a person can achieve with a mitzvah, or the level that he can not unachieve through an avera, Eretz Yisrael is much more sensitive. And that is what is behind this pasuk, Vayikra Perek Yud Ches, pasuk Kaf Ches, describing the land of Israel reacting so badly to these Averis. They're not only Averis in Eretz Yisrael, but things become exponentially worse within Eretz Yisrael due to the relationship. It's a relationship that has a privilege, but it bears with it a responsibility. And therefore, with regards to those mitzvos, when the Sifrei says, even after, should it be, chas v'chalila, that the Jewish people are thrown out of Eretz Canaan, besamtem es devar eile, still do the mitzvos. Yes, you need to be told still to do the mitzvos. Hanichu tefillin, asu mezuzah. Not to say that there is no requirement, it's an absolute requirement. I should mention parenthetically, it's part of the discussion, it is attributed to the Vilna Gaon, which would actually be a chiddush lechumra, that what the Sifrei means to say, when it says, even if when you go into Golos, keep doing the mitzvahs, it is a reference to mitzvahs hatluyas ba'aretz. There should be some form of a practice and awareness of mitzvahs hatluyas ba'aretz, so that you'll be in practice. You shouldn't be complete ignoramuses when you come back and you'd have no idea what's trumas and what's maisers. Now, it is true that Rashi in front of us says, talks about tefillin and mezuzah. Hanichu tefillin, asu mezuzahs. It is reported in the name of the Vilna Gaon that is an incorrect reading of Rashi. Very often, the printers, if for the sake of brevity, wherever they could, they would contract words into Rashi Tevus. The original manuscript was, Rashi Tevus was an acronym. When it was reopened, it was not always reopened with the accuracy of what it was contracted from in the first place. Now, this obviously is a very delicate question. On the one hand, the printers were not famous for their scholarly acumen. If they were such scholars, they wouldn't be printers. It was a self-defining enterprise. But on the other hand, sometimes they opened things up in a way that was not really in keeping with their original intent. In the name of the Gaon, it is said that the reference was to Trumas and Maaseres. Originally, the reading of the Sifrei is, even after, if should you go into Golos, still keep up mitzvahs. Hatluyos ba'aretz, hafrishu trumos, isru masros. Which became contracted, hafrishu trumos became hey taf, isru masros became ayin mem. And when the printers saw that, they saw hey taf and ayin mem, they opened it up to hanichu tefillin and asu mezuzahs. Well, maybe. But certainly the reading of the Ramban was that it's about Hanichu Tefillin and Asu Mezuzahs. And the point is that even though you will not, if we could just put it into numbers for simplicity's sake, you cannot have 100% fulfillment of a mitzvah in Chutz La'aretz. You are 100% obligated. But the Kiyum is not the same. Nonetheless, you still need, your obligation has not wavered. I have heard in the name of Rav Nevinzal, Chiddush, la halacha, is it la halacha lemaisa? That I don't know. Rav Devensol, his chibas Eretz Yisrael is part of, for him, that's part of life, Eretz Yisrael. The first time he ever left Eretz Yisrael, which he had to for a fundraising dinner, he was already, he never left Eretz Yisrael. When he came to the checkout desk, so the person behind the desk said to him, is there any type of seat that you'd request? And he said, yes, the back seat of the plane. The last seat of the plane. So that even as he has to leave, he should be the last one on the plane to leave Eretz Yisrael. And he already booked in advance, as close to the front as possible, and that's an issue of a millisecond. That's Rav Nevinzal. And Rav Nevinzal said, La halacha below lemaisa. I'm not signing on at lemaisa, but just to appreciate that, if a person wakes up in the morning in Chutz La'aretz, they're in Europe, and they put on tefillin, and then they take a plane journey to Eretz Yisrael, it could be that they have an obligation on some level to put on tefillin again. Because they now have the possibility today to fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin to a level that they did not yet fulfill it. Ad kedeka. So when we say that Eretz Yisrael is shakula keneged kol mitzvahs, it should give us a perspective. It doesn't mean, which of course, to take that literally would be the ultimate irresponsible abdication of fulfillment of mitzvahs. And we should not think that people didn't do that. But when we say that Eretz Yisrael is Shekinah Kol HaMitzvos, what it means is that it adds weight to every mitzvah. Every mitzvah done in Eretz Yisrael has more weight to it, has more content to it than a mitzvah in Chutz La'aretz. That's important. That should be known. So these are sentiments, of course, that we are mindful of. And these days we need to appreciate being in Eretz Yisrael, that the Jewish people have Eretz Yisrael, to appreciate the privilege of Eretz Yisrael, but also the responsibility of Eretz Yisrael. That's really the message of the Ramban. I believe there is no greater message for these days than this. It is about the unique relationship, the unique possibilities that exist for living Torah in Eretz Yisrael. There are many other discussions that take place during these days. I hesitate to say that I wonder whether they are at the heart of the matter. There's an issue of Hallel coming up this week. The sugya of Hallel is so complicated, I wonder whether a person could get so wrapped up in the particulars of Hallel and forget what the day is about. It would be a great triumph for Talmud Torah, but his appreciation of Eretz Yisrael, I wonder whether the deal breaker is not Hallel with a bracha. That is infinitely more complicated than the very simple gratitude for the nisim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed for us, which are no risk. And that's something that we should appreciate, not only these days, but if you only remember once a year, it should be a reminder, should be conscious of it for the whole year. We're surrounded by nisim the whole time. Until next week.